This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall. All right, so we're here. Well, normally this would be the day that a chapter pack is released, but it seems like I missed it last week, and I think it was posted on Card Game DB on Friday. Now, remember that this is a bonus episode. It does not take the place of a regular weekly episode, and it's also not edited to the same extent. We try to get this up to you as quickly as possible. It always seems to be frantic, but we managed to hunt down someone, a familiar voice for those of you who've been listening to the last couple of episodes. We're joined by Florian Maas from Germany.
Yeah, hello to every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there. But let's not be delusional, mainly Dicks. Hello.
He knows our audience. All right, so just like last time, we won't be specifically reading out cards or giving them letter grades, but we'll be going through the cards in the order that they are in the set. We'll start us off then with the first card of this new Champion's Purse cycle, and that's the Knight of the Songs. It's a 2-for-2 bicon knight with joust, and he gains +1 strength for each prize character you control out of Bera. So it's nice to see more joust. It's nice to see a 2-cost knight. None of those things are bad. And Joust is supposed to sort of be a Baratheon theme. I mean, we've got Dale, we got the Knight of Flowers, we have Highgarden Squire. They even get some support with the Storm's End Tourney Grounds. But it's never really... Storm's End Tourney Grounds isn't enough of a reason for Joust. So I guess my verdict on this is that it'll probably see play in Knight's decks if they need the extra 2-cost Knight. Noble Cause, this will also get renown. And the Joust may become amazing once the strength starts getting boosted, but right now we really only have one other card with prized, and that's the Smuggler from last pack.
The problem with Joust and Baratheon is that most of the time you have those amazing characters like Dennis or Robert that you really want to have in the challenges, and that just doesn't have really synergy with the Joust keyword on a character like this. I mean, I don't want to do a challenge alone with this character. I want to make a challenge with him and Stannis and Melisandre or something like that.
5 other characters with renown, yeah.
Yeah. So that doesn't really fit the bill in Baratheon. Also, we have Brightwater Men-at-Arms, who are just, like, a better character. I don't know. I don't like it.
I actually like it in Knight's deck. I think it gives you a late game ability to push through challenges to close the game out, something that Baratheon was missing. And Baratheon was running before this guy, the knight that gave you the influence. And I think we're going to see a replacement in a lot of decks that don't use that influence to this knight, because he's, I think, better than the influence knight in some types of decks. So I'm happy with him. He's a chud that'll actually get played.
Wait, did you just say that Bera likes characters to close games?
Yeah, barracks could use this to close games, correct. So in a late game scenario where your opponent's been able to basically blockade you with characters, you're not able to push your challenges anymore, and you need that 1 or 2 last power, a Joust character is extremely good at pushing through those challenges if you can bump them. So,
and you have the Smuggler's Cove.
Exactly.
I wanted to mention that, Smuggler's Cove. Yeah, that seems like a good combo.
So you go forward with Smuggler's Cove, he's 4 strength, he's stealth, the only guy that could have potentially blocked him with the high enough strength, and you get that last power you need to win the game. So I think he's useful in that way. So he's basically useful in, he's a good recovery card, so he doesn't help you win more or win faster, which I don't always like those types of cards anyways. He's the type of card that can actually help you win a game later when you're not ahead.
All right. Well, he'll see play then primarily where his knight trait is involved.
Yes, I don't think you're going to see him outside of a knight's deck. Or if there's a ton of prize characters, like you were saying, Alex. Mm-hmm. If Baratheon gets a whole bunch of prize characters and stuff that he can get the pump from.
Yeah, the next card is the Rider from Storm's End. He's a bannerman with 2 strength and a military and a power icon. And if you control a star character, the rider gets +1 strength. And if you control a Lannister character, the rider from Storm's End gains stealth. Not particularly impressed with this one. I mean, he's kinda like the same, like the Knight of the Songs. I mean, he's a 2 drop with 2 strength and a military and a power icon. Nothing to be really intrigued about. I mean, like, literally, he doesn't have the most important icon in Barra. And I just don't see it being good. Especially because the only build that I think could use this character is the Barra Conquest Lannister Rush build. But that build doesn't really need a 2 drop all that much. That doesn't really do anything. And as already mentioned, I think Brightwater Man-at-Arms is just a way better character than this. So I think the Rite of Storm's End will end up in my binder.
I'm going to have to agree with Florian on this. I mean, the only thing that I could see him used for is if I really need that Bannerman trait for some reason, or if I was running a ton of dual house characters, like if later on later in the cycle, we get to see more dual house characters like, you know, Brienne, who just triggers effect naturally, and then he'd always be, you know, 3 strength stealth, basically, whenever I played him, then I could see him in the deck. But otherwise, I don't see playing him that often.
Yeah, I certainly don't think that the effects there are powerful enough that you build to take them into account. So if you happen to trigger them with Brienne, or the Wildling Bard, or Jack and Hagar, or you're stupid enough to play Ghost of Winterfell or Royal Guard, you know, that's not too bad. The Tyrells trigger the other half, so it's sort of like a neat little bonus. But the Bannerman trait isn't as good as the Knight trait we were just looking at. The discard Bannerman for Barra is just strength on power challenges, which isn't really all that necessary. So, yeah, I'd currently say that this one's not going to see play, and that I might be wrong if there winds up being a crazy neutral deck with all of these Bannermen all keying off one another, which would be fun, but probably not very competitive.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, if we had a couple more trial characters and a couple more good Stark Barra characters, and you had, you know, maybe 4 of each in the deck, then I might throw a couple of these guys in, because there's a pretty good chance you'll get one of his 2 abilities triggered. But not yet. So the next card is A Taste for Glory. It's an event, Baratheon only, and it says, challenges, until the end of phase, each prize character you control gets +2 strength and gains renown. Okay. It seems okay, actually, depending on how many prize characters you have in play. This is probably going to bump 1 or 2 guys, generally, maybe 3. You know, it's really hard to make a call on this card, I think, until we see what the other Barra prized characters are, because if they already have renown, then this event is obviously less useful. What do you guys think?
I think that when I look at this, I had to quickly look up because it seemed almost the same as Heart of the Stag, which is the other event, which is also +2 strength and renown, but that one's on 1 Barra character and it's only until the end of the challenge. So this one's certainly more versatile if you have the prized characters and can be a much bigger boost. I mean, this clearly cements the idea that they're going for prize to be a theme in Barra. I mean, we were just looking at the Knight of the Songs. It keys off other prize cards. The Smuggler that we were looking at in the last chapter pack stands other prize cards. This one gives you more prize. It looks like they want Barra to be the house in which you actually build a prized deck. And if that's something that they're going to flesh out, this could be a really strong power gain. But
yeah,
until
I don't know
that fleshes out, we can't use it right now except with Tycho and the guy from last cycle.
I don't know if I'm leaning too far out of the window if I'm saying this, but I think this card is actually insane. Because look at what we have right now. We only have the Seasoned Smuggler to go with this card. And when you have like 2 Seasoned Smugglers on the board and they attack you for power, you defend with the 2 Seasoned Smugglers, play this event. You stand them both, get 2 power for renown, and then you can swing back with a power challenge with strength 8 to get another 2 power for renown and win both power challenges. That is a 5 or 6 power swing, only with those cards that are released right now. Once we get more prize cards in Baratheon, this could actually go completely crazy. And also we have a lot of standing effects in Baratheon, so that is not a problem. And since it goes for the entire phase, it's also a great card against Burn. So I think this one is really good, and I think it could be the new pet event for Baratheon in the near future.
I agree, except that, like John said, we've only seen one prized character in-house and one out-of-house that we haven't looked at so far. And the only other ones that have been suggested so far in the cycle are things like there's supposedly a new Robert. We haven't seen the text on it, but they just mentioned that there was going to be one. And that card's probably going to be prized every other – or have renown. Every other version of Robert so far does. So – I mean, this might be enough to drive you to include extra neutral prize cards just because that effect is really powerful in Barra.
Yeah, I love, like, the plus two strength is nothing to laugh at. You're right, it's all challenge. But at the same time, we need to have prize cards to power it. So, you know, with the current card pool, not so excited. With all the chapter packs that have been released, maybe it's going to be, like you said, it might be the event. We're going to have to wait and see.
I like those cards, though. Yeah. I like the wait and see cards that make you think, you know, I'm not shoving this one into the binder yet. I'm keeping it on the table, and I'll have another look at it in a chapter pack or two. So, I guess that leaves I get to go on to the next one. In my house of choice, this is a second version of Wex Pike. He's a Tricon for two, with one strength and the squire trait, so no ally, unlike the last one. He's prized one, has stealth, and when he wins an unopposed challenge, you pick a prized card in your dead or discard pile and put it back into your hand. The other version of Wex Pike is very good, but the downside is he's an ally in a house that generally doesn't need to play allies, so I'm already interested in this because it's a Tricon, which in Greyjoy is huge. He's got stealth, which is nothing to scoff at. And that ability seems like it could have some real potential. Now, in Greyjoy right now, the only thing that's doing is fetching the Reaver's Song.
Well,
but
that's one other thing.
Storis, I guess.
It's also fetching Wex Pike's dupe if you've got it in your discard pile.
I guess, yeah. Although, duping a one-strength character in Greyjoy is not particularly likely to happen. You've got better ways to save it and better ways to spend your cards. But although this works with out-of-house cards, too. So if you're going to start using splashing, which seems to be a theme they're pushing, this could be an engine. Because it's not that hard to get an unopposed challenge in Greyjoy with a character that has stealth.
Yeah.
Especially when you have three icons to choose from. But currently, in-house, he's only bringing back the Reaver's Song, which you probably were running three copies of in your deck anyway. It's not a huge deal. Out-of-house... this could be a lot of fun. This is another one that's staying on the counter until I see what comes up in Greyjoy.
I mean, he could be pretty freaking annoying just with the Reaver Song. Like, we're cursing the Reaver Song to use it all the time to make sure your opponent never has any locations while you have, like, some Ice Fisherman in Winter in play. That's a pretty solid choke all by itself.
Yeah. I also like the interaction with Black Sails because you get a solid character to jump to. Because normally you have problems with Black Sails, or at least sometimes, to find a character to actually initiate the right challenge. He has all icons, he has stealth, he's perfect for that role, and I really like him for that.
Yeah, I think he'll see a lot of play.
Yeah. And he's the first official squire in the game. I mean, that's got to be worth something.
We did hear that we were going to get a Podrick Payne, so I hope he's got a squire trait too. That was in one of the spoiler articles they mentioned.
Okay.
Does Kingsguard Squire not have Squire trait?
No. I looked it up.
That's horrible.
That is horrible.
That's horrible. I'm sorry. Okay.
The next card is a Greyjoy event. It's called Every Captain is a King. And it's also House Greyjoy only. After a player declares a naval attacker or defender, put a warship location into play from your hand. I don't really know. I guess it's designed to work in tandem with the Reaver's Song, but I don't know why I would waste an event slot on this, especially if you consider that an event in Greyjoy means that you're playing one less location, one fewer location. And that just means most of the time that you're not playing a very good card, like Naval Escort or Longship Iron Victory. So I don't really see this making the cut in any of my Greyjoy decks that aren't running the Reaver's Song.
I think you're right. I think the card is basically unplayable at the competitive level. On top of that, you have to have a player declare a Naval Attacker Enhancer. So if you're just trying to trigger it, you sometimes have to overcommit to the challenge. Putting in a Warship location, as you said, it works with Reaver's Song, but the only ones where you'd really want to cheat them in are if you're going out of house, and as of the new FAQ, you can't even cheat Meraxes in, and things like Foam Drinker or Black Wind, where you could actually get an effect from the kill effect or the deadly, and that's not worth wasting a card on.
No. And exactly. It's card disadvantage. Like, you're using a card just to play a card you could have played normally if you had the resource. I mean, I guess you're getting a resource advantage out of it, but I don't think it goes in any of my Greyjoy decks right now.
The art's nice, though. I like the art.
I think this card could have been amazing if you could put a location to play, or just the Warship location from your hand or discard pile. Then it would have been a playable event, but like this, card is advantage.
I agree. With this card, at least you're not losing cards. You're breaking even. Yeah. So we have Sir Robert Strong is the next card. I'm pretty excited about this guy. He's a Kingsguard, a knight. He's Shadows S1. He's Lannister. And he's obviously Lannister only, as all Shadow cards are. Well, I mean, not Lannister only, but they're house only. So he's got no attachment. Each character with printed cost that is less than the number of characters in its controller's dead pile comes into play, knelt. Wow, that's a powerful effect. Really good card. I mean, I can see this being included in Lannister No Agenda, in anything that would run a Shadows and have a Kingsguard, this guy's going in. He might just be the only Shadow card in some decks. He's that good.
I think you're overselling it. I don't think it's that good. I think it's a very powerful effect. It's going to backfire often, although you get more kneel on what they're playing, so you can kneel out the rest of what they're doing. So it's still advantageous even when it's backfiring. But the reason I say this is because Lannister is not that good at keeping cards out of its own dead pile. It tends to play a lot of cards, a lot of cheap ones. It gets hit by a Valor. It has 6 or 7 cards in its dead pile, and now all of your cards are coming into play knelt while you were playing against Greyjoy and you've only put in 1 or 2 cards in his dead pile. That's not to say he's a bad card, but I don't think he's as good as you say he is.
I mean, he's definitely one of the stronger cards in the chapter pack, but I think his power level is difficult to assess because he just does very different things when you put him in different decks. In an aggressive deck where you, like, flood the board with characters and try, for example, to protect yourself from Valor with a counterplot, he does something completely different than in a more control-oriented deck, where you try to Valor early to get rid of opposing characters. In a more aggressive deck, he can shore you up against weenies of your opponent. And in a more defensive deck, he can just stall the board. It makes it kind of difficult to say how good he is, actually, because this effect varies so strongly from deck to deck.
The fact that you would put him in both an extremely heavy aggro deck and extremely control deck, and he would fit in both decks, actually shows me that he's a powerful card. It means not only that he's powerful, but that his effect can be effective, look at that, in a huge array of different decks. So I think he's very strong. I'm not saying that he's broken or anything like that. He's not like, for instance, the new River Plot, but he's very powerful.
I mean, I think he'll be a lot of fun. He's one of the cards that you look at him and you're inspired to try him out, to try some new things with him. I just don't think he will drastically affect that many games. I think he's something that will be in a couple of the Lannister decks out there, and that he'll be quite useful when he hits the board most of the time. But I don't think he's an auto include, and I think he'll backfire often.
Yeah, I like that. I think the game has too many auto-include or auto-exclude characters in that regard. And I like that we get characters that don't fit into every deck, but are certainly good on their own right. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Well, I guess I get the next slightly dull one. This is Frey Emissary. This is another House Frey, so that army from last cycle is definitely getting much better, faster. That, by the way, sarcasm. But he's a 2-for-2 Bicon military power, Bannerman House Frey, and it's the same if you control a Stark character, he gains a strength, but if you control a Barrett character, he gains renown. So this is really confirming for us that the effects are house specific. So whichever ones of these say if you control a Stark character, they're going to all give +1 strength. And clearly whichever ones are sort of allied to Barra are going to give renown, to Lani are going to give stealth. I think we saw a spoiler for one linked to Martell. Or maybe that's later in the cycle, seems to be an intrigue icon, so they're predictable effects. This one, however, is much better than the other one, because a 2-cost character with renown is something that you really do like to see. And so if you're going to have a couple of Tyrells, or a couple of Barra cards, or you're running this in a Lani Barra Conquest, suddenly you have a 2-drop that has renown, and that makes a difference. Is it great? No, but this one is much more interesting than the other one.
Yeah, it'll probably speed up the Baratheon Lannister rush, maybe almost as fast as the Martell Baratheon rush. We'll see. But that's a good thing.
Deck. Lani just doesn't have all that much renown to boot. So a two drop fairly efficient character in Lani that is likely enough or not hard to give him renown, you look at him in a different light.
Yeah, I mean, he isn't the misery of a card. See what I did there, but I'm not particularly thrilled either. I mean, he has renown, but he doesn't do the other thing that Rush or generally decks that are faster really need, and that means helping to push challenges through or helping against resets. So, yeah, he is alright, but whatever. He's a 2-drop weenie with renown. The next card is Counterplot. It's a House Lannister-only event with Prized Three, the first one of its sort, and it has a limited response. After an opponent reveals a plot card, deal a unique Lannister character to cancel the revealing of that plot and move it to its owner's used pile. That player must choose and reveal a new plot card, limited response per phase. First of all, Prized Three, holy cannelloni, that's expensive. And basically unplayable once your opponent hits 9 or 10 power, I'd say. Perhaps an interesting bit of statistic is that it's a quasi-reprint from the CCG era. The difference being that originally you had to kneel just a Lannister character, and now you have to kneel a unique Lannister character to trigger the effect. And it wasn't a limited response before. Now it is a limited response.
And it wasn't Prized Three.
Yeah, well, and Prized didn't exist back then. I'm not very impressed. It's only really good in a rush deck, I think, where you want to prevent your opponent from valoring your board away. But overall, I think Prized Three is really hard to play in any deck that doesn't really end the game fast. Because, as I've already mentioned, once you hit 9 or 10 power, or come to the later phases of the game, you just can't play this anymore without giving your opponent the opportunity to just win the game.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that, because I know the 2 Champs 1 Chump, when they saw this spoiled, were all over it and said it was a phenomenal card, and I spent the whole time thinking it really wasn't. The main reason for that, to me, is that they get to reveal another plot after, and they've seen your plot. So you cannot really, if you're doing this as a sort of counter-Valor, you can't use it if they haven't Valored. Because whatever plot it is, no matter how damaging you think it is, they could just flip into Valor. And it becomes quite hard to use in that way. You know, they put up Fear of Winter. Do you use this and risk them Valoring you instead? It's really tricky. Once they see your plot, you're giving them the choice of the remaining plots. which becomes less and less of a choice as you get later in the game, but that's when the prize 3 becomes a very expensive cost. So I think that this has a really game-changing effect. It's easy to use in the sense that you don't need to anticipate your opponent's valor. You don't need to, you know, outwit or any of those other tricks. You don't need to play the plot game. But I don't think it's that great a card.
So I'm going to agree with both of you in that I don't think it's great that great a card, though I do think it'll see play in some decks and not just Rush. I think it'll also see play in decks where you establish an early board dominance, like Clansmen, for example, and you want to hold that dominance and basically survive your opponent's Valor, where you're running, you know, Claim 2 or that are becoming Claim 3 because of Burn Men, and basically your opponent needs to Valor your board away in order to ever put another character on the board, because you're just going to kill them every time. And then counterplot in this case, where, you know, you've been controlling your opponent's board where they don't have a lot of power, it might be, you know, plot 3, plot 4, because you're a Clansmen deck, you don't really win quickly. You could see counterplot as well. It's too bad Clansmen isn't tier 1 yet.
Now, I want to mention something timing-wise. So they've done a couple of things with this. First, it only works on opponents, so you can't reveal your own plot and then see what your opponent's revealed and then cancel your own plot and reveal a new one, because that would make this much more powerful. It also cancels the revealing of the plot. So that means that you're not going to get another trigger off Golden Tooth Mines. You're not going to, you know, this can still work with a lot of timing issues that otherwise would be very, very odd, including Art of Seduction. Because it's still happening in the same framework, if you have Art of Seduction and they reveal a plot, you counterplot it, whatever they reveal will still be pinned by Art of Seduction. So, I mean, I can't think of a specific case because they'll know exactly which plot you have. They'll get to pick something they want to be pinned. But the timing-wise, I think this one's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's about it. Like you guys said, it's not a super great card. It's not bad. Like, it'll see play in some decks, but it'll be few and far between. So we're at Summersea Scouts, Martell character, 2 gold, 2 strength, an intrigue icon with a naval enhancement, a power icon, and a learned crest, which is kind of interesting. It's a House Dane, which is cool too. It's prized 1. It has a response. After you lose a challenge as a defender, reveal the top 2 cards of your deck. Put all revealed prize cards into your hand. Return all the non-prize cards to the top of your deck in any order. It's kind of interesting. I'm not saying, oh my god, he's super good, but he's not bad. You know, it depends, again, on the types of prize cards we're going to see later on. I like the naval enhancement on the intrigue icon. You know, we're starting to see maybe enough cards to actually run a Black Sails Martell deck effectively, which is cool. And it's another Learn Crest for Martell. I mean, they're getting a lot of Learn Crest support. We might be to the point where people can actually start playing, like, Doran's game, the event, where you can kneel Learn Crest to steal the event that the person tried to play and stuff. Well, maybe not quite yet, but we're getting close.
Yeah, they released Doran, and they released Summersea Scout, and even just going into Targ, they had Aegon and Lysona Mar. They seem to be giving us considerably more non-Maester Learn Crests, which I think is interesting at the design level.
Although I have no idea why this guy has Learn Crest. I mean, that is kind of like, I mean, he's a peasant in that world where peasants usually can't even read. So is the learned crest now more like a read-learned crest? I don't know. But
I want to draw attention to the fact that it has a naval icon in a house that really doesn't have very many, and a house in which event search would be huge. So I don't think this is still enough for us to make that Martell Black Sails. My last couple attempts at Martell Black Sails have not worked particularly well. But it is interesting. It does, again, make me keep it in mind. But its response is sort of the meat of the card and what would theoretically justify the prize one. You can trigger it every time you lose a challenge as a defender, but you're probably going to reveal the same 2 top cards of your deck, and you're probably not going to find prize cards.
Well, I've done a little bit of math on that, and actually, when you have 12 prize cards in your deck, you end up at a chance of about 36% to actually reveal at least one with this effect. And when you have 6 prize cards, for comparison's sake, you end up at about 19%. So it's really not that great. No. That means that you, for every fifth challenge you lose, you get a card.
If you were changing the top two cards every time, which you aren't. Right?
Well,
you
yes.
search the same two cards.
Yeah. But I think it has more of a psychological effect on your opponent, because they have to ponder before every challenge. They have to make a decision whether the challenge is worth the possible card disadvantage. And I think the psychological part is the real deal on this card at the moment. And also what I want to mention is that I really like that Mattel is getting more naval enhancements on icons, because it makes losing by four much more easier.
Yeah.
Because you can just jump them to your opponent's character into the challenge, lose by four, and then trigger Viper's Rage or something like that. So that could become a thing if Mattel gets more good naval icons on characters.
That is neat. That hadn't occurred to me. Just to touch on the response again, I think there are a fairly limited set of circumstances in which stacking the top two cards of your deck so that you can organize them and know what you're going to draw next matters. And that's obviously with anything that's going to be challenge phase draw, typically. And that includes Quentin, that includes the Martell No Agenda Army that lets you take events. Gilly, for instance, you could put an event like Condemned by the Council on the top of your deck, win a challenge, draw from Gilly, and then use that event. So there are cases in event-heavy decks especially where stacking that challenge phase draw could matter. Unfortunately, you're only looking at the top two cards of your deck again, not the top six, in which case it would be an absolutely amazing effect.
Possibly broken. At that point.
Okay, so I'll move on to the next card then. This is Blood Orange Grove, and this is actually one of my favorite cards in the cycle, not because of its power level, but it's a really versatile card. This was spoiled on the Quill and Tankards regular, and I think they reviewed it in about one sentence, and it was a very all-encompassing sentence, so maybe you should check that out if you haven't already. But this is a prized one Martell location, costs one, with an any phase ability where you can choose a character with a crest. That character loses all crests and gains a challenge icon of your choice. And the reason I say this is so versatile is because you can use this either to strip characters of crests, so your opponent could potentially be outwitting your Valar, you're going to pre-plot, use this to get rid of the learned crest. Your opponent's got a whole bunch of nobles on the board, and you need to get rid of those nobles. You strip the noble crest, and then you can just give them an icon they already have, so you haven't lost anything. Or you can use it to give characters icons. And icon manipulation in general can be quite interesting, especially since there's now effects that if they have more than one icon, then they wouldn't count their strength. So you could potentially really mess with certain characters that were hoping to win challenges by giving them icons, or giving Ariane Martell, for instance, a military icon. Everybody likes that.
I agree, Alex. I think it's super versatile. I think it'll be fun. Yeah. I don't think there's not much to say about it other than what you've covered. I think it'll be a great card.
Well,
I'll be including one of in a lot of my Martell decks.
It is prized one, and it's not a hugely powerful effect. But then again, the prized might be good with the card we just read, for instance. You know, the Summer Sea Scout. There's a better chance of getting this Blood Orange Grove. Again, this seems to be some Martell synergy with prized, so maybe that's a good reason.
And I think locations are probably safer than characters in general. I mean, there's a lot of location hate, a lot of location stealing in the game now, but I think it's probably still safer than a character. It's only prized one.
What I don't like about the card is that it doesn't really interact with your opponent's board. It doesn't give your opponent something to worry about. It is just a card sitting there, and unless they're doing crest shenanigans or stuff like that, the card isn't all that effective. I mean, some people on Agate Cards have been saying that this is Mattel's Pantoshi Manor, and it's clearly not.
No.
It's okay. It's a fine card, but it's not insane. Like,
yeah,
that.
No, it's not a Pantoshi Manor.
Yeah.
I guess the last point then before we close off with this card is that you can also strip Shadow's Crest, and that can really matter in some situations. It can stop people from returning cards to Shadows. It could stop people from standing them with Kingdom of Shadows.
You can't put Preston back in Shadows. He doesn't have a Shadow Crest anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
And also a very good point with Kingdom of Shadows. You could, for example, strip your opponent's only shadow character of his shadow icon and then force him to stand your character.
Yeah. Darn.
The new card is... I can't pronounce his name, so I'm just going to say it's a champion card. It's Desert Raider, another House Metal character. House Metal only, priced 1. He costs 2. Has 2 strength and a military icon. A House Dane character and an ally. And he has the following response. After you lose a challenge, put Desert Raider into play from your death pile. Then choose a character and either an intrigue or a power icon. Until the end of the phase, the chosen character loses that icon and Desert Raider gains it. Just a solid card. Just can't argue against that. It is repeatable claim soak. You have to pay price 1 every time you choose to kill him for claim. But, I mean, after that, he comes back from your death pile and he strips your opponent of icons, gains an icon himself. That's just all around a good card. And the only thing for your opponent, the only thing your opponent can do to really get rid of the character is to discard him with ally hate. And since Westeros Bleeds has been restricted now, I think the main issue with the card, basically getting Bleeds the way, does no longer exist. So that's just the icing on the desert.
Icing on the desert. I think there are a couple of points. The first is that this one doesn't have an infinity symbol, which seems kind of weird. I don't know if they're abandoning that because it didn't really mean anything. It was just a nice reminder that you could bring this card back from the dead pile. But I noticed that at least on the printing that we're seeing online, it lacks that symbol. The second is that you can choose a character and either an intrigue or a power icon. The character that you choose that's going to lose icons doesn't actually have to have that icon. So if you really need to give the Desert Raider an intrigue icon and none of your opponent's characters have one, you can do it.
Yep. You can steal icons they don't have, and I guess they would be at minus 1 then? So even if the opponent tried to give them that icon later, would it not have...
Yeah, it would, essentially. It's a constant additive effect.
Yep.
So you'd be at minus 1 than plus 1. I'm kind of worried. I actually think this card's insanely powerful. I think that if you have 2 of them, for instance, it starts to become a real nightmare for your opponent to deal with. You know, we'll see how quickly the prized adds up. It may be enough of a balancing factor. But if it wasn't prized and it wasn't an ally... I mean, when this card was first half-spoiled and it was just the title and all the way up to the prized one, people said, it's a 2-cost ally with prized. There's no way we're going to play it. And I think this will see a lot of play.
Yeah,
this is a really good response. 1 power for Claim Soak, early game, I totally pay that in Martell. And then with the added bonus of some control effect coming out of it, that's really nice.
And we have to take into consideration that the Scourge is back. And stripping a character of a single icon is pretty powerful if you have the Scourge on the board, because you can Scourge them first, and then they have to initiate that challenge first, or they're just going to lose the last icon as well.
Yeah, and this guy lets you chump block a bunch of stuff that you might have not been able to chump block before, because like someone comes in for a deadly... or a military challenge, you could chump block with him, he dies, yeah, you give him the prize, but that they would have got that for the unopposed anyways. And now he comes back, and he's stripping an icon, he's standing again. So, you know, you didn't lose a lot. I think you'll see a lot of play.
You can also kill him for the spoiled Harrenhal that's coming up to cancel effects. I mean, it's easy to get him into the dead pile, and it's not a bad place for him to be. Because then as soon as you lose the challenge, you've gained a really powerful effect. I think this card is absolutely amazing. I think it's going to see a ton of play, and the only good thing to counter that is the fact that refugees are off the list. People will be playing a lot more Dissension, so the card's a little more vulnerable.
Unless it is in your death pile during the marshalling phase.
Actually, a very good point.
So I guess that means I get the next character.
Yeah.
Sir Edmure Tully. He's a 3-cost with deadly, a 3-strength military power icon. He's got the war crest. He's a Tully, a knight, and a lord, so he's got 3 good traits. and he has an ability on top of all this. Any phase, choose a card in any player's discarded deck pile, shuffle the card back into its owner's deck, limit once per round. I think he's going to be in almost every Stark deck. He's a really good three-cost character.
I don't know. I don't know about every. I mean, he's clearly better than the last version of Edner. And his ability is it's an any phase, which is worth noting. And you're going to use it probably every turn.
He's got a Warcrest, and he's deadly. And three good traits.
Yeah. I mean, we won't have to worry about Vera dying anymore, because you can just shuffle her back. I think he was kind of designed to be the anti-card to be, against Baron Knight of the Hollow Hill. But now they have, Baron Knight of the Hollow Hill had an unfortunate accident.
Involving the Red Queen's faithful.
And now he's kind of like, yeah, he's not a bad character, but unless you are using the Warcrest, I don't really think he is really that good. He's still better than that one greater location they designed to counter the Long Voyage that is now completely unplayable.
Yeah.
But I'm not excited.
Well, I think the ability is interesting in that you're probably going to use it every turn, either offensively to say, look, I don't want you to be able to recur that card, or I want that card back into my own deck because it's a, unique character or a dupe or something, and it belongs in my deck again. Or especially if you have search effects, which Stark has many of, it's not a bad idea to put that card back in the deck if the game's going longer. So I think the ability will typically be useful. It won't be game-changing.
Deadly is a good keyword.
I think he'll be in several Stark decks. I don't think he's an auto-hit.
He'll be in Knight deck for sure. He'll be in Tully decks if those exist. He'll be in, like you said, Warcrest team decks. So I think he'll be in a lot of decks. He's good. He's a solid character all around. But you're right. Yeah. He won't be in every deck, which I think is what you were getting at before. It's great to see good characters that won't be in every deck. So it seems FFG is doing that right in this chapter pack.
Oh, yeah. I got a fun one now, then, if we move on. I got the Gatehouse Towers. So this is one of the towers in the neck. One of those, fortresses in Moat Cailin that you just can't get past. And this one's House Stark only. It's a one-cost location, unique. And it says, your characters gain +1 strength if you control fewer characters than each opponent. This is terrible on so many levels. They even specifically wrote it so that it's awful, even worse in melee, because you need to control fewer characters than every opponent. It's just, Stark is generally not trying to get fewer characters than the opponent, but even if you were, +1 strength isn't enough of a payoff, and there's just no advantage. It's a one-cost unique location, so you're not going to run three of and build your deck around it, or stack up the effects.
Yeah, if
it
wasn't unique.
It's just horrendous.
Maybe you could play it in a janky deck, but now... Yeah, no, I don't play this card.
I think you should have read out the flavor text. That would have had more relevance.
That's probably true.
I mean, this is just... The card doesn't match Stark's current playstyle at all. Like, not at all. Stark is playing from ahead, always, at the moment. And this just... doesn't do that. And
they have
then,
to play from ahead. They can't come back. It's their disadvantage right now.
But even if they could, this is not a strong enough effect to warrant a change in playstyle.
No.
If it was +3 strength if you control fewer characters, then suddenly go, okay, hold on, that's interesting. +1 is
negligible. Doesn't do anything. What the sodding hell? Give us good star cards.
Ah, oh, you poor thing.
I think they did that with the next one. Why don't you read it to us?
The next card is Needle. It's a one-cost attachment. It's an item and a weapon. Price 2. It can only go on a unique Stark character. And it basically turns that character into Brienne. Or for anyone who isn't very familiar with the cards, while attached character is participating in a challenge, opponents cannot trigger effects. I know... a lot of people like this card very much, but I personally don't. I think it is not a good effect to have on a price 2 attachment, especially if you consider the rest of the cards in this chapter pack. I mean, we have Briseris, we're going to come to that later, and the Lost Message. Those cards kind of make me not want to run attachments, and especially with the hits against Bloodthirst and Knights of the Hula Hill in general, with this FAQ, I don't think I really want this in my deck anymore. And I don't know, if you're really into safety, you're really a junkie for safety, I think this needle will serve you well, but otherwise, I'd rather play White Ravens than Frozen Solids, especially with Knights of Kings of Winter off the restricted list.
See, I have two problems with this. The first is that it's called Needle, it's Arya's weapon, and yet it gives the Brianna Stark effect. It should totally have been Oathkeeper. It should have been Brienne's weapon. But the other one is, I think I agree with you. I think where this would really shine is if it was on a character that you could get participating in multiple challenges a turn, which is something that's difficult to do with Brienne. Now, there aren't that many of them, you know, unique Stark characters where you can reliably do that.
Bruce Bolton, Blackfish.
Yeah, Bruce Bolton, there's a good example of a character that you could potentially get two challenges where you have that same denial. And that's a case where I'd start to consider using Needle.
Yeah, there's not enough characters in Stark to put a prize 2 attachment that doesn't have any other effect than to make someone become Brianna Tarth. I would just run another copy of Brienne.
In
most cases, yeah.
Who wants to become Brienne of Tarth anyway?
Oh, yeah. I'm glad I get this card because I finally get to read a card I really like. This is Roin Pullman. He's 2 cost for 2 Bicon Intrigue Power. Both of those have naval enhancements, and he's prized 1 with melee and the East trait, so he's not an ally. I really, really, really like this card. Way more than you think from the fact that it doesn't have any fancy effects. Melee and naval icons is a phenomenal combination. He's a huge deterrent in both directions. He affects the board hugely. He's giving an intrigue icon with naval to a house that has traditionally only had power icons, basically, with naval, and it gives him a lot more versatility. And he's just a rock-solid character for 2.
I think Tark Black Sails is a thing now.
Might well be.
I don't really like him for his Targaryen Black Sails.
Really?
I think it's not really a thing. I think this guy is much better in a Dragon Pit build, because melee is a keyword that gets much better when the average strength of characters on the board gets lower. Once every character on the board has like strength 1 or 2, melee just is insane. And with the Dragon Pit, you can do that. You can make all characters small on the board, and then this guy wins you every intrigue or power challenge you so desire.
Yeah, regardless of stealth, regardless of anything, because of his timing.
Also, I want to address that it's slightly racist that the man with the long pole is a black dude. I mean, come on. That's probably the most common prejudice ever.
All right, well, yeah, so I'm glad, actually, this is, again, a card that we all agree on, because, you know, this isn't a card that has a big flashy effect, but it is an extremely solid card.
Viserys Targaryen, 1 cost, noble, 2 1 strength, he's got an intrigue and a power icon. He's prized 1, House Targaryen only, and he's got an awesome ability. Any phase, you kneel him, and you can discard any type of attachment from play, period. He's a lord and a king. I really can't see most targets without one of him.
Agreed.
I mean, I think he's an auto-include.
And, in addition, he looks like a zombie.
Which is awesome.
Someone mentioned he looks like Sephiroth, and I think that's so true. But I really dislike this card, not just because it's an auto-include, but I think it's too easy. And I know that this is, at least it's House Targ only, and House Targ has other tools for attachment removal. So, and you're probably still going to run your Dragon Thieves because they're awesome, and you're probably still, you know, you can use your Marinese Brothel. But this is just really, really easy attachment removal, and we just, you know, negates Needle that we just saw and things like that. It's too easy. I don't like that kind of point and click, that effortless point and click, effortless reusable point and click.
I think it was necessary for Melee. I don't have any idea of that format, I have to say, but I've heard things about Melisandre's favor being incredibly overpowered, and I think that's addressing that problem a bit more than Joust. But then, on the other hand, why wouldn't they just make it an effect that is only triggerable if you have more than one opponent? Yeah. I don't know.
He's also a one-drop king. I mean, Targ like has lots of nice cheap uniques anyway to fuel their what's it called? The
Tourney Grounds?
Yes, what? The Marine Tourney Grounds.
Yeah.
And he helps that. But he's a one-drop king. Turn off your opponent's Stannis or their Tommen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, yeah, I think you include one in a Targ deck.
Yep, always.
Sounds good?
No, sounds right. Bad.
Good card. Sounds bad.
Yeah.
Next up is Tokar. I have no idea how that is pronounced. One gold, and it's an item, attachment. And it gives the character that it is attached to a power icon, and during power challenges, that character gains renown. Let me put it this way. I wouldn't even play that if it was free. No, wait. I wouldn't even play that if it was free and had the setup keyword. Seriously, why?
See, I'm not sure I agree with you there. I agree with you at this point in time. That said, there have been more and more cards in the last sort of three cycles that are pushing a little bit on essentially a sort of rush deck out of Targaryen. And we saw, you know, you could run that as an Heir to the Iron Throne deck and potentially get two uses out of that. Gaining renown from a non-unique attachment is not something we've seen a lot of in this game and is potentially quite powerful, even if it's only during one challenge. And I think, didn't we see another card spoiled for the next pack or the pack after that, Fire Made Flesh? That's, again, a way to give renown or non-kneeling. I think there will eventually be a Targ Rush deck that surprises us, that uses this Tokar, and I think it's been building for a long time. I don't think it's there yet, but I think this is one that you will see played in the future.
In that one type of deck.
Yes, in that one type of deck.
Okay. But that is based on the assumption that the designers actually have intentions.
Well, this is fairly safe. They may not be the intentions that they, you know, that we would like to attribute to them, but they must have some intentions.
I actually think the designers in general have very detailed intentions and these huge long views. And actually some of the problems we see with the meta is because they come at it with this huge long view. You know, we had all these issues, I mean, we as players, with these Knights of the Hollow Hill decks with these heavy event focuses that were causing all these problems. But when we look at the next stuff that we've seen spoiled, like Harrenhal, where they can cancel any type of event whenever they want, it's like maybe they had solutions, you know, in the pipe. They realized, oh, wow, you know, we knew all about this because we designed the cards, but the players were going to have to wait for 4 months, and it was going to be kind of not fun for those 4 months. So, you know, we'll put it on the restricted list, and maybe we'll take it off later. So I think they have these really long views. So I'm with Alex on that. I think maybe they're planning for something that we're going to see in 9 months from now.
It was more of a friendly jab in that direction. I do not think that they don't have any sort of intentions with the cards they're designing.
I might be a little testy because of the, you know, the week leading up to the FAQ, there's been a lot of negative comments towards FFG on the forums.
That was the worst.
Oh. And all right, so we'll move on to the one of the last three cards, I think. So this is a neutral card. It's Shagwell. It has a very nice flavor text. It says, "You must hurt, sweet Shagwell. I'm too droll to die." He's a two-cost unique fool, mercenary, military, and intrigue bicon with two strengths. He's prized one, deadly, and he says, "If you are running the neutral faction host card, Shagwell gains response after you play a mercenary character, choose and kneel a non-army character, limit points per round." So in a neutral deck, he's not Owen cleared. That's not saying much, but I mean, he comes into play and he kneels an opponent's character, and he's a good set of bicons with a keyword. He's definitely an auto-included neutral. Will he see play outside of neutral? He is a nice icon split, but we have seen that before. It's unlikely without that ability.
House Pain Enforcer,
I think, is the one.
Pain Enforcer
doesn't even see that much play.
No.
But there are other houses that might need the icon split. But I want to get in. I don't like this if you're running the neutral faction house card. And this is just a difference of opinion, obviously. The designers have taken this in a direction. But I always felt that the advantage of neutral was that you could splash cards and themes from the other houses. But neutral does not have its own theme. It does not have its own cards. It does not have its own mechanics. And I don't really like the idea of trying to drive it to one. And, I mean, obviously, there's probably going to be a pretty cool deck with Tattered Prince and some mercenary support and splashing out of house mercenaries where Shagwell becomes an engine. And it won't be a competitive deck, but it'll be fun. And
now he's just a Castellan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so that's fine as an interesting design aside, but I hope they're not trying to hammer the neutral faction into a house. I don't think that's what should be done.
The problem that I see here is that there aren't actually very many good mercenary characters that I really want to play. I mean, what is there? We have the new Wargo that we're going to talk about as the next card. Then we have the Tattered Prince, who is just a blank Tricon. And then that's basically it. I mean, Targ has some good mercenary characters, but they're mainly Targ-only characters. And the ones like the Longlancers only interact with Targaryen characters. So basically,
you have Dario, you have that bounces up to the first challenge each round?
The zero cost ones.
I mean, those are pretty decent even in a neutral deck. You can get quite a few Warcrests on the board and things like that. I think there are the mercenaries to do something. I don't know if what you do would be all that interesting yet.
Yeah. I think if he didn't have the, like you said, the neutral house only, he'd see a lot of play. Like a lot of play. But with the neutral house only, I don't think we're going to see any play.
No.
At the competitive level.
Not at the competitive level. Except Jim will build something.
Yeah.
It will be amazing.
That'll be amazing. Yeah. we're at Vargo Hoot. He's 3 for 3 strength. He's got a military power icon. He's prize 1 renown. He's got a military crest. He's the response. After Vargo Hoot enters play, choose and kneel any player's house card. Then you may discard a character agenda from that house card. It's kind of cool. He's all right. I like it. It's kind of nice that we have something that can affect character agendas in that way. I think, you know, with all the new no agenda tech that's out there, and then the character agendas, that they were getting to the point where they were quite good, and it's nice to see that if they ever get to a point where they're too powerful, there'll be a hard counter built into the meta. So
I disagree. I think the card's not bad because it's a neutral renown, and you got to be careful with those. There aren't that many neutral renown characters out there. In fact, there's almost none. And so he could be quite good potentially. He's got the Warcrest. And I don't mind coming into play and kneeling an opponent's house card. That's an entity that we've seen interaction with before, that there will be interaction with in the future, can prevent Hollow Hill from using influence that turn, can prevent, you know, someone from milking their the alliance stacks against you. But specifically interacting with an out-of-play entity like an agenda and discarding that because it's a character agenda, I think that is clunky, a bad precedent, and shouldn't exist.
Oh, so you don't like it from a rules perspective?
I don't like it from a, it's not necessarily rules, but more a consistency standpoint.
Right.
It's not streamlined, it's clunky, I think that it is a bad idea.
Okay, so getting away from that, pretending that it's not any of those things, it's awesome, isn't it?
Nah.
Like, just fun. It's fun.
You're not
going
to include him as a counter to character agendas.
I might include him if these new attachments that go on your house card, a whole bunch of them start coming, people start using them. just to kneel the house card.
Right. So the kneeling the house card bit, perfectly legitimate thing.
Which is
it's
cool.
The second part that's just, you could say, oh, it's just icing on the cake, but you're never going to use it specifically to tech against them. And it's
unless they get really powerful. It's some spice in the soup. I like it. It's a good soup.
I will tell you one thing I do love about this card. I love the flavor text. It has sapphires in it, which is phenomenal.
All right. And so what's the final opinion?
All I can say is, if you want to go deep on Warcrest stuff, fire away. But other than that, he's just a beatstick with renown. I mean, a very renowned beatstick, and that's it.
But look at the picture, too. The art's good.
I mean, he has his zebra he's writing on. But
yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And he's
I
a mercenary.
For the zebra.
He's a mercenary. He goes right into your Shagwell deck or whatever you just contrived.
All right, the last card of the cycle. Florian, do us the honors.
The only plot in the chapter pack. 3 gold, 0 initiative, and 1 claim, the lost message. It's a raven, which is kind of relevant if you consider the effect. Because it's prized 1, and when revealed, choose and discard an attachment from play. Which means you can basically discard everything that answers to the name of attachment, even if it's a raven.
So maybe this is the reason they took those the summer and winter agenda off the restricted list?
Yeah, that was exactly what I thought as well when I first read this card and then read the restricted list. It's okay. I like it. I like giving decks that usually have no way to deal with attachments to at least give them some tech against it. Because
I don't.
I think it is necessary because some decks really get hosed by attachments. Like, Greyjoy has a really tough time dealing with something like Enslaved. And you still have to include it in your deck. You still have to run
it. That's a plot. That's a big slot. You only got 7 of those, maybe 8. And you're taking one of, like, 301 isn't the greatest, you know, gold, or it's got a good effect, but in some games it's not going to do anything for you. It's just going to be a 301. There'll be no attachments.
I agree that it won't see a ton of play, and if it does, it'll be an interesting counter to the Ravens. All of what you guys are saying is true, but in a game that took so long, that banned an effect that controlled attachments out of a house where they specifically said, nah, we don't want that house to have it. We don't want Lannister to have Compelled by the Rock. We did it wrong. We're going to errata that, eventually reprint it after it comes off the ban list, not for power level, but for flavor distinct to the houses. This is a plot that would belong in somewhere like Targ. They already have Mad King's Legacy, but this would replace Mad King's Legacy because it targets the Ravens. Now it's something that you've given to everyone. Again, it's easy, it's point-and-click. It won't see a ton of play. It is eating up a plot slot. But I do not like this in the way that it makes houses more uniform. I do not like this in the context of the way they've treated things like Compelled by the Rock.
The only thing I really don't like about this card is that it sort of mitigates the drawbacks of the season, again, agendas. The old ones, because you can discard the opposing Raven during the plot phase, and normally the drawback triggers during the draw phase, so you don't get to that anymore. So you can still draw 2 cards with Summer, even if they had the White Raven in play, stuff like that. I don't really like that mechanic. I think it makes the old season agendas even better than they were before. But I think it's fair considering that we now have new agendas that sort of hard counter it anyway.
I guess there have been a couple of these, but this is a card I don't like from a design standpoint, not from a play standpoint.
Yeah. I can see that.
All right, well, I guess that's every card in the cycle, so it seems like there's, at least in 2 houses, a sort of prized theme in Vera and Martell, and it seems like in the cycle overall, they're going for a sort of splashing theme where you take cards from other, I mean, we've seen some other spoilers that play into the same thing. But maybe if we can take a few minutes to chat just about prized. So we've now seen some prized play from the first cycle, and we're seeing this next cycle. Do we think prized is going to continue or be a force in the meta right now? Is this enough that every deck will be running some prized?
Not quite yet.
I think we'll see a lot of prized in the meta. Whether it'll be a force, I'm not sure. I think a couple more chapter packs and then you'll have your force. Till then, it's harder.
I think A Taste of Glory is indicating that there are a lot more prized things to come. But you can't really tell right now. It's like back when the Masters were introduced and you got three chains and the Master Agenda, and you were thinking like, okay, what am I going to do with that? And then every chapter pack you had more, and in the end it turned out to be overpowered. I think, I'm not saying it's going to be overpowered, but I say it's going to be strong, I think. I think it's going to, we'll have enough incentive to play a lot of prized cards in our decks.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. Thanks again for doing this, Florian, and for staying up. And I'll let you fall asleep.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.